Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told.
So The Media Project is underway once again. Believe it or not, here we are, here we are, here we are. That is...
What does that mean?
Well, it's three
here
of us.
We are,
you
we
know,
are, here
the publisher, the professor, and the editor, Ira Fussfeld from the Daily Freeman in Kingston, Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, professor, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, and we're really, really happy to be here.
Well, first of all, you know, I do want to congratulate the Times Union and Rex and his entire staff, Jim Odato and Jimmy Vilkind, for the incredibly good reporting that you guys have done on the Cuomo administration and much of the stuff that's going on in New York State that a lot of people don't want to cover. You really have done a great job, Rex.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. We had a little dust-up recently over access to documents in the state archives from Andrew Cuomo's tenure as Attorney General.
Right.
And, you know, I just think that the important thing is for people to understand, whether they believe the newspaper is doing the right thing or not, to understand who is withholding documents and the so-called laundering of documents going on there.
Could you just briefly précis the story so that everybody knows?
Well, the notion is that when an attorney general finishes his tenure, the documents from that work go into the state archives. Now, we understand that some of the material handled by attorneys general is material that is sensitive because there are criminal investigations and civil cases that the lawyers are pursuing. But generally, you want to see for future generations or for journalists even now what it is that was behind all the public pronouncements. Those are the papers of the Attorney General's office. We previously reported that very little from Andrew Cuomo's 4 years has gone to the archives. And now it turns out, as we were pursuing that to see, you know, what has he dumped into the archives, we found that the governor's staff now, Andrew Cuomo now being governor, people from his staff rather than from the Attorney General's office are now going there and pulling stuff back out of the archives even after we've already seen it and withholding stuff before that is before the archives are allowed to present it. So the archives are ostensibly an independent entity. They report to the Education Department, which is headed by a chancellor appointed by the legislature. The archives, however, have been yielding to the governor's office, and the governor's office has been saying, no, can't let anybody see those documents. So there's been really wholesale, let's say, editing of history by the governor's office about his tenure as attorney general.
Just so the public will understand, what the fact that you went to look to the archives at the outset, was that essentially a routine thing that your investigative people were, you know, they were sitting around saying, why don't we take a look at that? Or did somebody actually say, you know, you ought to take a look and see what's there?
No, we actually did not have any intent to look for any particular issue. We really wanted to see what was going into the archives. It was more or less a fishing expedition. You know, let's see what's there. And we found very little of interest, frankly. Most of what you find there, it turns out, according to our reporters, is the kind of stuff that a pack rat reporter might find on their desk if they ever excavated after 4 years. Press releases, announcements, and so on. And so it was kind of surprising to get all of this stuff. There was one interesting document pertaining to the investigation that Attorney General Cuomo had done of the so-called Troopergate affair, when we had reported that the Senate Majority Leader Joe Bruno was using state aircraft for purely partisan purposes. And he responded by angrily demanding that the Attorney General investigate the governor's office release of those public documents to us. And the Attorney General Cuomo came back with a harshly critical report of Governor Spitzer. There was one document pertaining to that.
One of his political rivals, we should say.
It turned out to be. There was accidentally one of those internal documents left in the files for us to find. So we wrote a little about that, but not really.
So the
much.
Governor's office has reacted very gentlemanly-like and has congratulated you on doing this work that is serving the public and and is otherwise not critical of any of these endeavors, because he clearly understands that this is a journalist's role, to particularly if newspapers are devoted to investigative reporting.
Or as my kids would say, not.
You mean he hasn't been happy?
No. Before publication, we received a 2,200-word missive from his director of communications attacking the Times Union. Similar letters the governor's office has sent to the New York Times on a couple of occasions and I think to other media, just saying that we'd hit a new low journalistically. I think that's the direct quote.
Now, this is a guy with, according to, I think, Quinnipiac now, a historic 73% approval rating.
It's much higher than our approval rating.
Yeah. So do you think that politicians, I guess philosophically what I want to know is, do you think politicians get more arrogant as their numbers grow? And look, I'm going to say something here which may be misinterpreted. I just think this was a stupid exercise on the part of the governor's office. All they had to do was shut up and everything would have been fine. Nobody would have cared about it. You guys covered Troopergate. I never fully understood everything in it. I think if I didn't understand it, most of the public didn't understand it. But by doing this and by taking on the press the way that they have, they really, because in the end, do you really want to take on the New York Times? I do it, but who am I? I don't think it's a good idea.
Well, I don't quite understand the vociferousness of the response either.
What have they got to hide?
let's see. I
think there was a sound there out of Rex's.
but it's just. I mean, I do really think that, as Ira was saying, that our role is really to do this kind of digging and find stuff, and that does put us in conflict with politicians sometimes.
Well, and you know what's interesting is that a lot of times politicians, and I've experienced it in my market numerous times, politicians who we generally are supportive of on our editorial page, and who generally get very favorable coverage on our news pages, on those occasions when they don't, they hit the roof. They threaten not to talk to you anymore, and they try to discredit you, on and on and on. And, it's just part of the DNA, I guess. But I who knows what Cuomo's people are thinking in the case of this Troopergate material, but it seems to me they're trying to push back as hard as they can. They know that the press is not as popular as they are, and that they're hoping that you're gonna cow down and go away.
Are you going to cow down and go away, as Iris says?
You know, that's a really good suggestion. I wish I had thought of that. Okay.
It worked. All right, next story.
All right.
Anything in the mail this week? Well, I hope you guys will keep going, because there's not a lot of investigative reporting going on anymore, and as newspapers have scaled back, and I know your newspaper has dedicated itself to recommit resources in that way, and this is important stuff. Nobody else is doing it.
It's really fundamental, and it is hard to commit the resources to it because it takes time, and so you can fill a newspaper with reporter stories about here's what happened yesterday, and sometimes when you miss some of those stories of what happened yesterday because you've devoted resources to investigative reporting, you kick yourself. Today's Times Union, as we speak, for example, has two stories that we had missed the day before, mm-hmm. that are like reports that were released or that kind of thing, that we just, it was not in our hands. And I know that if the half dozen people on my staff who are dedicated really to longer term stuff, if they had been doing daily stuff, we probably wouldn't have that problem. So, in my job, part of my job is to not come down hard on people when we don't have something necessarily. If I'm really serious about saying we want to do investigative, analytical, interpretive reporting, you pays your money and takes your bets.
Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and do what Richard Neustadt once referred to, the eminent political science? You don't have a PhD, Rex.
I studied Neustadt, though, is when I would say yes.
Called the law of anticipated reaction. So you say, oh my God, they're going to call the chairman of the Hearst board. And this stuff usually doesn't happen. But at 1 o'clock in the morning, it seems perfectly logical that it will happen as you wake up in the middle of the night. And,
And so Neustadt said that drives a lot of policy. I'm just curious.
I think it does drive policy in some people's cases, because you can come up with a smorgasbord of things they could do.
Yes.
Very easily. I knew a guy once, my boss at the Eagleton Institute of Politics, Politics, now gone. He had a sort of wonderful job as the head of the Commission on Immigration in the Western Hemisphere, and it did very little. And he got, I think at the time, this 1960s, something like $80,000 a year doing it. And one night, in the middle of the night, he gets a call from Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson says to him, "Don, I want you to go to Vietnam to oversee the elections of President Tu to make sure they're fair and honest."
To make sure that Tu is fairly elected.
Meantime, they're bombing the ROTC Center at Rutgers. And it's the last thing he wanted to do. And he said, yeah. Alan's 3 o'clock in the morning. He's asking, "What should I do?" I said, "You know what you're going to do." Because, you know, I mean, nobody had to draw him a roadmap that, you know, they were going to take his money away or that they could take his money away, which he desperately needed. I think newspaper people in charge, Ira as a publisher or you as a, understand that there are some ways they can kick back that aren't that nice.
I always plan for the worst, and then if exactly. it's not that bad, I've had a good day. That's pretty much my motto.
Excellent. The Media Project, Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Rex Smith here with you from Northeast Public Radio in Albany, and we have a little bit of mail, and by the way, if you want to send
last
us
thing.
Something.
Yeah, can I just say one last thing about the Cuomo thing?
Oh, please.
He was stupid to do this. I mean, what else can I say?
Well, in case
really
that wasn't
think.
Clear before.
Right. Governor be stupid, says Chartok. That's a great headline. All right. Scott from Boston Spa writes in to ask about why it's for one of our TV stations up here in the Albany area, saying, "Why do you continue to show a picture of Trayvon Martin as a cute 12-year-old? Picture is obviously dated. I've seen more recent pictures of him that more closely represent how he looks before his death. 6 feet tall, tattoos. And so thinks the public is being manipulated by the showing of old pictures." So,
well, look, I have said to you the placement of your articles, the headlines on your articles, the information you have in your articles, whether paragraph one is paragraph nine or paragraph nine is paragraph one, you know, has a great deal to do with the message that we all get about any of this stuff. So if you show a picture of Trayvon Martin as a teenager as opposed to a grown up, you're going to get a different reaction in people's minds, whether they know what they're doing. Is the key question here, or whether, because I worked in TV for a long time, or whether they are doing it just because they want some what they call B-roll, or they're grabbing something, or whatever is convenient at the moment.
What they happen to have.
That's
yeah.
possible.
That
that's
seems,
possible.
It seems more likely.
Yeah, I do think that's probably true. Or there's some, the photo of him as a grown up isn't as clear, or something like that. But it is something that we need to keep in mind because it, we've had instances, for example, where there are mugshots of people who just it makes them look really terrible. Versus a photo that makes them look more like you're accustomed to seeing.
Well, there's nothing like one of those pictures where they're holding up the number in front of them.
Oh, yeah. That sends a message.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think the guy's concern is worth weighing. I mean, we always have to weigh whether the photo evokes an emotional response that doesn't necessarily reflect reality or whether it's simply a good photograph. I don't know.
Or whether they just want to make the point that this other guy, Zimmerman, was a bad guy who shot a good guy.
Here's a long, 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 long letter from a listener in Yemen.
Yemen, New York?
No, not Yemen.
Yemen.
The real Yemen, who's upset about the media using the term Al-Qaeda when, in fact, it's just a terrorist organization, terrorists generally. He believes that the media have been too sloppy in using the term Al-Qaeda in Syria and elsewhere, when in fact these are just homegrown terrorists. I think I'm characterizing this conversation
sort of, yes.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Pretty close.
So I don't know anything about that because I don't do that kind of journalism. I'm sorry. I mean, I'm just not an international journalist. So
I think at the end he may say, "You may think I'm splitting hairs on this," or something like
but
that.
But it's important, he says.
But
that's
it's important.
Correct.
And I think the more precise that we can be, the better off we are, obviously.
I dare say that there are a lot of people in this country, in the media and in government, who don't fully understand Al-Qaeda. I'm certainly among them. And that there may be 50,000 branches of Al-Qaeda and that the Al-Qaeda cover as a name may be too broad. But I don't know that we know any better.
No, but I have to say, Ira, anybody who reads or peruses the news media, the newspapers, knows what you just said. I'm not putting you down that you didn't say something that was profound there. But the truth is, we all know that Al-Qaeda is a loose confederation, and people keep saying that again and again. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you don't explain it every single time, I think, is important.
Mm-hmm. The point of, for example, a New York Times story saying Al-Qaeda insinuating its way into Syria conflict, this is a story that this writer particularly is concerned about. He says, well, it's a big deal if a global terrorist network is in fact active in Syria in what is emerging as a civil war there. But for American journalists to, if we were sloppily using that term, then we'd be turning citizens of Syria perhaps into military targets by using that word. I think what we don't know here as people choosing what stories go in the air or what stories go into the paper, we have to trust almost that the reporters on the ground are making good judgments that, that in fact this is Al-Qaeda if they say it's Al-Qaeda. I don't know how to second guess that from Albany.
Me neither.
Yeah.
How about you, Ira?
No, Kingston, we do not know.
Hey, speaking of Kingston, the Olympics are happening.
Oh,
this is
yes,
big
Kingston.
In Kingston, right?
Why? No. Well, I don't know. I'm just wondering. The Olympics have started as by now, not as we speak, but you know, it's an interesting exercise. I covered the Olympics in Lake Placid. I enjoyed covering the Olympics in Lake Placid. When you were there, you got a real sense of the camaraderie and the world stage and people coming together. I think the Olympics have changed significantly since then for any number of reasons, but I'm just down on the commercialization of the Olympics, the jingoism of the Olympics. And then as it relates to the media, NBC has bid billions of dollars, I guess, to receive the rights to cover the Olympics. They're wall-to-wall on all of their networks and all of their programs. As we speak this morning, you turn on the Today Show, and the lead story was the U.S. soccer team women winning their first game. You go to the other network morning programs, and they're reporting news. You know, in this case, this morning.
Because they don't own it.
They don't own it. Now, and no doubt if ABC had the Olympics, they'd be doing the same thing. I just think it's, you know, if people want to watch it and enjoy the competition, that's fine. But, you know, the amateurism has departed. Like everything else in this world, it's all about the money now.
You're becoming very jaded.
Yeah, I'm not just becoming. I think I've been for a while.
But there's another, you know, interesting aspect to this, and that is that all of a sudden Mitt Romney is going to the Olympics.
Yes, he was in London.
Now, why was he there? Because he wanted to remind everybody, I suspect, that his big claim to fame was that he pulled out the Olympics the last time and was able to save it, and that would show his experience. But while he was there, one of his aides had something to say, which was, Obama doesn't understand the historic Anglo-U.S. relationship between the two countries. And a lot of people said that was subliminal racist talk.
Ah.
In other words, that we Anglos, you know, stick together and quote, and you don't have to jump too far to say that this black man, you know, is, you know, not cognizant of that. Well, if that's the case, it's disgusting.
Hmm. On the other hand, they would probably say, oh, you journalists making a mountain out of a molehill. This is a staff member making a casual comment. And here you are attacking a patriot.
What do you think, Rex? You think it's possible that the guy knew what he was doing?
It could be. Imagine that. Yeah. But I'm on the Olympics. I'm with Ira on the. I hate to be a grouch about it, but you know, it's not a newspaper story anymore. By the way, because of the time frame things happening in London.
Although this works fairly well for AM papers because of the time difference. The 5-hour time difference means all of the events will be over in time to be in the paper the next morning.
Yes, but they will have been seen on television.
Oh, sure.
By everyone
before. Cows long left the barn.
Yeah. I mean, they actually will be 24 hours old, or in some cases 36 by the time we actually air them, I think.
No. Not nearly that bad. No, this is a better, the timing for this is better than, for example, China.
Wrong way.
Still, we're doing much less than Olympics coverage of the past, and we are really looking toward, as we cover it, we're projecting forward. That is, what's coming today or tomorrow rather than...
I read 6 newspapers every day, and I have to tell you, there's plenty about the Olympics in the newspapers.
That leads me to what you're saying. Well, it depends on what newspaper, but it also leads me to, I was going to ask you guys what you thought of the coverage of the Colorado shooting and leading to your point, because now that I've asked you the question, I'll tell you what I think. The night of the Colorado shooting, I watched one network newscast, which was CBS. It was the entire newscast, a half hour. That was a Friday night. The next morning, Saturday, I turned on the Saturday Today Show. 2 hours of nothing else but that shooting. My question is, was there nothing else going on in the world there, that day and that evening? Now, I felt good when I picked up both my newspaper and the New York Times on Saturday. Both newspapers properly covered it as the major story of the day. But in the Times case, it was four columns to the right with a big headline. And then there was other news in the paper. And inside the paper, yes, there were a couple of pages of coverage for sidebars, as I suspect most papers did. But it was not the only story of the day, nor should it have been the only story of the day. So now we go back to the networks. Should that fill the entire newscast? I mean, at the end of the day, this was a horrific crime. A lot of people killed for all of the reasons that it was an important story. But it
And
then
it could have happened anywhere in America, but everybody was going to see Batman that weekend, had on the back of their mind, is another nut going to come out?
Could that have been covered in 15 minutes out of the 30?
Well, wait, Ira, you know, you're not a babe in the woods.
Well, I'm raising the issue. Perhaps we'll illuminate our audience.
You give them what they want. Well, and that's what they suspected that people wanted, and that's what they were going. You think it's just because it's responsible? Well, and how many times have you and Rex dared to lecture me, about the fact that you have newspapers which can have more than one thing on the front page, you know?
That's the point.
But the other guys can't.
That's exactly right. You can't turn the page on the TV newscast. You can change the channel. But at least if you're not interested in reading all this coverage on an event, whether it's this or the Olympics, you turn the page and watch and go to something else. I just think it was another instance of TV broadcast news going way overboard on a story that was important but not that important.
Yeah, but to Alan's point, it's just a weakness in the form of of television journalism, because it is sequential. It's one thing after another. You can't, as you say, you can't look unless you're going to have a split screen and have a newscaster here doing one story and something else.
No, but you have 25 minutes plus the commercials. Mm-hmm.
You have about 8 minutes of real news.
Well, it just seems to me 14 or 19 minutes could have been devoted to that story, sufficiently covered it, expressed its importance by the amount of time you were giving it, but then still hit on the other news stories of the day, of which there had to have been many. There certainly were enough to fill my pages, I presume Rex's as well.
Well, all professors of communication always talk about, you know, what else could have been in the paper on the day JFK
that's
got
right,
shot.
That's right, that's right.
Or 9/11. After 9/11, it was days before we had anything else.
Well, no, but that's not correct. You had other stories. They were not as prominent.
They were buried, yeah.
But they were in the newspaper. You were still
reporting
what else was going
on. We did 6 weeks with only 9/11 on the front page. Yeah. It was really kind of amazing. I've never had a story like that. You know, the other media issue out of the attack in Colorado was the incorrect Tea Party report from Brian Ross, the investigative reporter for ABC News, you know, who this is the same thing that happened with the Supreme Court decision on the part of CNN and Fox in the rush to be out there first to say something before anybody else did. What Brian Ross did was he said, you know, we have now I don't know, he said, but there is a James Holmes who is part of the Tea Party organization, and it turns out, I believe, not to have been the shooter. And Brian Ross, to his credit, did say, now there are other people with the same name, but I'm just saying. James Holmes, Aurora, Colorado. And that really was an unnecessary report. That was really, I think, violated journalistic standards to put that on the air. Again, it's that drive to have something first, to be out there.
Well, also to make a statement. I mean, you know, Tea Party, gunmen, Second Amendment, you may want to paint the whole movement that way.
So it could be that there was an intent.
Could be Freudian subliminal.
Well, it's the old, they're making the sausage on the air. I mean, and as we print people are doing more digital first reporting, there's more of a likelihood of something like that happening to us as well. But it's particularly vulnerable in broadcast because these guys are talking about a story that's breaking, and they'll just talk about things that we might talk about in the newsroom but would not print until we had some verification. And so it's going to happen. It happened before. It happened when Reagan was shot, and they said James Brady, the press secretary, had died when he hadn't died.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Elicited quite a response from, I believe it was Frank Reynolds.
Frank
on
Reynolds was, well, he was also upset that Frank Reynolds actually melted down on the air, in part because they had been told the president hadn't been shot. The White House actually had lied to them. I recently reviewed that tape. And
just let's get this right.
Let's get this right. He was pretty upset.
Maybe we can get this right next week.
Maybe we can.
I won't be here, so there's a good chance.
Oh,
good
we're
chance.
Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to write to us, media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to have you listening to us again next week.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.